Very good.
All right. This is episode... What episode is this?
42.
I think we're on 42.
I don't know. That's a pure guess.
Yeah, this is episode 42 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. This is Kelly Galt.
Hey, y'all.
We are at the Wretched Mess. We've got a whole bunch of people camera. Here watching with us.
This is more fun than just watching you.
Yeah.
It's really a lot more
I know.
Fun. Other than Crapo, that's a little hard.
Well, the man who needs no introduction.
Oh. Thank you, Braden Anderson. You're out. That was your. I thought you were going to stay.
There goes Mark.
And there goes Mark.
All right. Well, this is obviously a little different episode than we normally do. We're at a fishing festival with a bunch of great folks here. So I think we're going to start by opening it up to the audience for questions.
Perfect. Oh, God.
If the world were to end, top five flex.
Okay. So the question was, if the world were to end, and what's your name?
Heather.
Yeah. Heather asks, if the world was to end, what are your top five flags?
That
what's that?
I have to have a talk with you. Nothing. Go ahead. What would the top five flies be? In history, you mean?
No, for you. To catch a fish. Catch a trout. What are your top five flies?
Dungeon and five colors? No, I'm just kidding. top five fly... Wow. Well, you'd be remiss if you didn't say a bully bugger, for sure. I mean, for sure. I wouldn't put a muddler in there because I think it's better surface than it is a sub. Clouser minnow would have to show. I think a dungeon would show. Are we referring to any flies? Adams, parachute Adams would be top one period in history. And
elk hair caddis.
No, hair's hair. I mean, okay. If you got to get every sub, if you had to go, I mean, it'd be easy to do all the streamers, easy. Dries would be a little tougher, but just to actually do. But.
No zoo cougar.
Well, I didn't want to go all streamer stuff. You got to have, I mean, the question is top five. I don't know. The cougar would be in there in a single fly thing, but. I mean, in current history, you'd have to put that frickin' Pertagon in there, too, because, I mean, things like a magnet. And so you'd have to put one in, but that would be number six. But we aren't going to really add that one. I can't do that.
Every time our guides come back from a day on the water and ask, what were they eating? It's always that olive hotspot Pertagon.
It is. You could have one fly the rest of your... It would just kill us all. It would rip our souls right out of our chest, you know? I'm not sure where your soul presides, but... It would be a hole. But yeah, it would be for sure. If it was all streamers, then it would be more fun. But for me. But the effort, for sure, though. For sure. I mean, if you just went if old school, we missed all wet flies, which is kind of a dying thing. But some form of hairs there would have to go top three. Anybody want to tell me I'm wrong or right? Somebody got, no, you idiot. You
all right, how about
you missed so-and-so.
How about just streamers?
Just streamers?
Yeah. I'm going olive dungeon, white silk kitty, maybe white flathead, although that's pretty similar.
Those are all my flies, though. And
that's all I fish.
I would have a zoo cougar in there.
I'd have a D&D.
I'd have a woolly sculpin in there for, I mean, regardless if it's mine or if you go back to Ed Shanks. Nothing's ever caught more fish than a woolly bugger in the history of the world, I don't think.
Yeah.
But it's not really considered a streamer anymore. But then a dungeon for sure, but that morphs into a shit ton of different styles.
Right.
I don't know. There's certain people who would have to say that sparkle minnow thing. That thing's pretty...
Dalai Lama, in terms of fish catching. Fish that have been caught on a streamer, Dalai Lama's up there.
Yeah, but you got to take Alaska out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, if you... Yeah.
That's more of a...
Alaska doesn't count.
No. It counts, but it doesn't count for... I mean...
It doesn't count.
It's a streamer. Pretty freaking good. Just don't think in all... And historically in the world, I don't think it'd be there, but... Interesting question. I thought you were going to ask me my last place to fish, but I keep in every podcast I've ever done, the last question is, so it's your last day on Earth. And I'm like, You know something I don't? Wait a second. I'm only... And I always say the same thing. I want a 10-mile lily pad, 60-pound braid, and a Bam Bam Ribera frog. And I'll fish with a bait caster, which really bothers people. But anybody else? Good.
Who else has a question? Josh, what you got? No questions.
Well, that's hard.
All right, let me know. In the meantime, we can jump to one from our YouTube commenters. Bleda 412 says, can you share your thoughts on zippered waders and their durability? I saw Kelly's review on the Squall of zippered waders, but I'm also interested in less expensive brands like Sims. And I think this is a joke.
Could be. It's a joke to me.
But I don't think we've really talked about kind of the difference in wader styles between zip and non-zip, pros and cons.
Well, this would be a great one for Heather to answer, because there's a gal that's going to come in here, Teresa Norberg, who was a guide a billion years ago. She wanted to make waders for women, and she wanted to call them weepee. That's the greatest thing. But as you get older, or if you just like getting in and out of your waders easily, I don't think anything's advancement in our world. Zippered waders is the greatest thing that ever happened. But it's pretty hard to get a cheap zippered wader.
Reddington used to make them, but I know they discontinued all their waders.
Yeah, I mean, to put the zipper into a cheaper componentry, the zipper's always leaked. I mean, this goes back to the 80s when the first one was called Dry Fly, and it didn't work either. It was a great idea, but the zipper's
catchy
leaked,
name,
right?
It was a catchy name,
and we all did it, but it's the functionality of a wader, to think that we've been pulling a freaking bag over ourselves for 100 years, how easy was that? And especially, and for women, they don't make anything that fits women, and so at least make that part easy. And when you go, you know, that quantum leap past 60,
right,
and you're a guy, it's really critical. And so I don't know, I think it's I don't know who else has one. I'm certain Bass Pro will have one.
Yeah.
But it might be in a neoprene. I don't know. But I didn't know Sims. Well, I don't really pay attention to them. But
theirs is still in
that 800 bill, isn't it? 700?
They've got a $1,000 one, and then they've got I think they make like a 650.
650?
Yeah, they make a zipper pair of waders.
That's not bad.
No, they're good too. I wore them for a while.
But the difference, I don't see any difference in the wader as far as the zipper and all that stuff.
No, it's just convenience. I mean, you pay extra money for it, but like, I was just out on the Clearwater with Josh, who's right over here, and I like to run.
I can see all these people. I can see you, and you are not.
Something about the perfect eyesight, I don't know. Like, you know?
You do this to blind me.
When was the last time you cleaned your glasses?
Start with that shit. I just did it.
Yeah, I was just out on the Clearwater, and I like running really lightweight, but it was 105 degrees out there, so like I had to carry water on me. And so I've got a little like fish pond water bottle holder that I run off the belt, and I've got a pair of pliers, and that's it. I don't have a pack or anything, and like when you play the numbers game steelheading, like, you know, if you get out of the river to pee, you're losing time to fish in your day. And so what I would end up doing is putting the water bottle.
This in your pants, are you?
No.
Okay.
I put the water bottle in my mouth. I mean, I look like a freaking moron out there, and then try to make sure nobody's around me. But like, that's where the zipper to me is huge, is if you're really trying to stay hydrated. Your other option is just not drink anything.
Who asked the question?
Bleda 412.
Bleda?
Yeah, it's somebody on YouTube.
Oh. So we don't know if it's a guy or a girl.
No. Statistically, there's a 98.7% chance it's a man.
You played the lotto?
No.
Did anybody win that lotto today? Did they already do that? My buddy said, but a bunch of us, we're going to play this lotto, right? And one guy's always virtue signaling. He just wants to help other people. I said, bullshit. They can get a job. I'm buying an island. And only a few of you are invited.
I might have mentioned this on a podcast where one of my favorite videos on the internet, they're going around interviewing people in a gas station who are buying Powerball tickets. Oh, what would you buy? Oh, I'd buy a yacht. Oh, I'd buy my mother a house. And they go to this one guy who's wearing a black hoodie. I go, what would you buy? He goes, cocaine and hookers.
I saw that.
And they go, oh, pull the camera away.
I saw that. It was that.
Yes. Odyssey's worth something, right? All right.
Did that.
Jump to a new question. This one's from N. Russell 11. We answer a lot of his questions. He asks great questions. Says, Kelly's repeatedly mentioned he likes glass rods. What are his thoughts on big game glass rods? Does he ever use these for streamer game? I occasionally use a 6-weight Echo Badass glass for streamer fishing on small rivers. It loads at short distance, and the rod is almost always shorter. Admittedly, it is a bit harder to animate the fly with the tip. Thanks a bunch. Nick Russell.
Big game and trout aren't the same to me. I have used them for muskies.
Yeah.
But they're 10 weights for the most part. And whenever you start talking glass like that, there's a lot of nostalgia. Not necessarily it's a better functioning tool. They can be a little more stressful on the big flies too.
Yep.
But I used to run that badass glass in Abaco. I used to run them for bonefish because it was so fun to just feel it flex and all that stuff. But I don't so much the streamer game or the big game. To me, I'd rather have the stick that's a little more performance based. Because when I run them, it's all nostalgia.
Yeah.
I run all in July when I do that game where I don't fish anything but glass, but I only fish dry flies, and I always fish Fenwicks, my old ones. But I don't. I tried. I had an old Lama glass, 10 weight, I think. I tried for muskies.
Yeah.
Just to be nostalgic, and it wore my ass out. It's a whole different world.
That was a lot heavier.
You're loading 400 grain lines, you know, just to move your flies. And so if I was trolling, I wouldn't mind, you know. But to throw it trout-wise, shit, what's that one, that Lodic? I like that one a lot, that TNT. There's a ton of them now. Not big game. Big game to me is, I lose my affection for nostalgia when it comes to a tool that...
Yeah, performance,
function, yeah, it's that. Just, it becomes really...
So I think Nick hit it on the head here where he said it's a lot harder to animate flies when you're throwing glass just because the recovery times are so much softer, the rod's soft, you can't pull on it the same way. So I throw glass rods with streamers and mice sometimes when I'm pulling rope. If I'm not animating with the rod tip, I'm actually pointing, you know, at my fly line, at the fly, and pulling with my left hand.
And you set the hook on a strip, so you're...
Yeah, you set it on the strip, so you're not losing any of the functionality. And, like, a lot of our guys, I know Chuck, Nate, I think Kyler, and maybe Jake, too, now, are all throwing, like, 8- and 9-weight badass glass as mouse rods and frogging rods. Just because, I don't know, it's kind of cool waving a blue lightsaber around. I throw them as... I threw that rod as a salmon fly rod this year because I broke my other stick, and...
That'd be all right for me.
It's great to throw. I think I was missing fish on hook sets. So when you're...
Could be.
One, my guys who I fish with suck at rowing, so I'm way too far off the bank. And you're trying to set the hook at, you know, 35 to 45 feet with an 8-footer that's really soft instead of a 9-footer that's stiffer. Like, I genuinely think I missed a couple fish because of that. Like, that's okay.
That's a nice banding on your ego, but... Yeah. Joe Brooks caught a couple 100,000 fish on him.
Yeah, well, me too.
I know. I mean, it just got easier. That's the whole idea. I mean, farming's easier than it was in the 1900s, too.
Yes.
You know, so...
Tools have advanced a little bit. That's what I like about that badass glass is still, like, it's a glass rod, but it's they market it as fast glass. It's very affordable, but it's more like a traditional graphite rod than it is... like ultra slow, and it's got some backbone. You can turn stuff over.
I thought it was like Kelly said. I think it was a great bonefish rod.
Yes, yeah, great bonefish rod.
I had a blast with it.
And it's just fun to pull on a fish and have that cork bending. Like, that's, I don't know. That's neat.
What are you doing? What was that?
I was asking why for bonefish.
Oh,
I mean, you're tight on them, right? You're not animating with your rod.
But streamers, you're animating and animating, and then you usually got to, you know, set a hook hard. That recoil can slow things down, huh?
Do you think there's any actual benefit to fishing glass, or is it just kind of soulful?
Well, it's good to feed your soul. I think there's an amazing difference in fighting fish if you understand it. Mm-hmm. Like when I run that Fenwick, I seldom lose a fish on that. I just point it at it, and that rod is like, whoa, you know? Yeah. It's just, I caught thousands of steelhead on them.
And you see, I mean, some more shock absorption?
100%. And it goes right, and it really talks to you when you'll feel, even on a 5-weight, 6-weights, if you're not hip to glass, a traditional glass 5-weight or 7-weight would be like a 5-weight of today, right? Mm-hmm. But it has soul. You feel it bend, right? And there seems to be no real end to the bend. It's like, and everybody's heard the thing about July where I fish for 1 month. I have a rule week every week, and they're all different. Like one, you got to fish a pre-1960 flies. The last week I fish horsehair tippet, and everything has to be, and I only get one fly a night, and I get three fish. There's just all these rules just to make it interesting. And I don't think I would have ever landed a fish on horsehair with any graphite rod. I don't think it, just because you just have to respond so quick with graphite, right, on light tippet, where you can just stand there like a freaking street sign with that glass, and it just goes womp, 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 womp. And if it's a real fish, you can just point at it. You can kind of point the butt section at the fish.
Yeah. Woof, you end up with like 7 or 8 feet of...
Womp, womp. Yeah, and they just... All that fast head shake thing, it's just this in the rod. Yeah. It's so smooth. And you just don't have that power you have in the graphite, so you have to stand there longer. That's right. Why we do that. We go out the hook to make them run around and shit.
Yeah, right.
Don't want them in. That's fun. This is all fun.
I disagree. I'm there for the eat. It's all I want.
Don't put a hook on then.
Fair. Carp. Carp's the other thing. People love fishing glass for carp. I haven't done a ton of carp.
See, I don't get that one. I've fished a ton of glass or carp.
Yeah.
I don't. Those son of bitches pull like a GT, man. They are like ripping ass. And
you're not going to stop them whether you've got glass or graphite or anything, right?
No, you're not. No. And I don't. But it's such an amazing thing away. Yeah. It's almost funner to have a rod pulling down like this. Because glass doesn't pull down like that.
No.
You kind of lean into it and it gives you the flex. I've never done carp. I did tons of carp fishing in Great Lakes. Never used glass.
Yeah.
And so, you go into Badass Glass or some of the bigger weights, it probably close, because you'd probably be running a 9-weight.
I know, Jeremy and Dan run 6-weights for them.
They run those little pissants, so.
Well, my buddy Nate Clement runs a 3-weight glass rod for carp, and it's got one of those segmented corks that's like, kind of looks like a skeleton,
the
rib
carp
cage
that we fished,
up.
Where I fished them, a 30-pound, 40-pound carp,
I don't think he's getting into fish
not
that
happening.
Big, but 10, 15-pound carp. And he says that cork, you can see
carp,
the cork bending.
15-pound carp drag a trout backwards up a river.
Oh, yeah.
And the same, I mean, they are, I'd go do it, though.
I'd love to. It'd be a fun one to go film. I love hearing stories of when you and Johnny used to go down on the lower mow. I think like 2 or 3 times, Johnny told me a story. He thought he hooked into brown trout of a lifetime. It was always a black dungeon, and it would be a 15-pound carp, that 8A.
Which if it had a 10-pound brown trout hooked behind it, he'd kill it. He'd drag it up, wouldn't even know there was something behind him. Yeah, the carp are bad. Lefty Cray told me that he found out I was fishing carp, and he says, and he pulls me aside and gives me this, like...
You're good.
He pulls me aside, and he gives me this, like... half-hour discussion on why carp are the smartest fish in the world. And they've done IQ tests on them, running them through these. And he's telling me all about it, how they run them through a maze with water coming in one end, the trout goes through some ridiculous number. 80% of the time it dies. The carp find their way like in a minute or two. Then you put scent in and it comes through, and the trout will find it about the same. Put them in a second time and 100% of the time died. Carp will have a 1-year memory and it'll go through it all the way right through from the beginning to the end. We're at some big trout fishing thing and he's just sitting there telling me all about why my trout are so stupid. Well, they outsmart me a lot, so maybe I shouldn't go to the carp world.
I'm surprised that they're that smart, because like every time I talk to guys who carp a lot, they basically bastardize, you know, small trout streamers, and that's what they fish for. Like, they'll take like one of those fighting craws, you know, Ritz fighting craw, and just cut the claws off it.
Hmm.
And it's just basically kind of a grubby looking.
Nothing. You ever fished them on dry flies?
Never.
Yellowtail Dam, Kurt Olson and I, one day, we're out on, this is like 30 years ago, and we're up on the Yellowtail Dam, and we're fishing, they called them tubers, because they'd come on, you'd see their backs pushing this tube of water, but they're not breaking the water, just underneath it. And we're fishing hoppers, and had a Joe's hopper on, way before foam shows up in the world, right? And I hucked this thing out there, like lead it about 5 feet, and the fish comes underneath it, and his mouth comes up, this little circle, and it does this thing, and it drops out. Touch test. And I'm like, holy shit, did you see that? He goes, give me your fly. I'm like, whew. And I whip this fly back. He goes, oh, too stiff. And he gets in there and he goes, put it on it. It's still a tube, and put it out there. It comes up, eats it.
No way.
It was too prickly. And
that's,
he's like,
wild.
I'm not eating. And I said, shit, if trout did that, we would never catch one, ever. It was like ridiculous. So,
well, not Clued, Sato, and Rich.
We've got all the...
Hey, Clued, you're in the back, buddy.
Come join.
Come join.
Don't worry, we'll make
it. One for Christmas, Clued.
We'll make enough fun out of you to make it worth your while.
Come on. You got a question for us, Clued?
Kelly, how come the Madison species are
poor? Right.
All
right,
so that's Richard J. Cluding asking, why is the Madison fishing so fucking poorly?
It's late summer. Just got to go where they live, baby. Get down and bump them in the nose. They'll be just fine to eat.
Do you nymph?
It's summer.
A little bit. Not much.
Yeah.
Good, I knew I liked you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why it's tough.
Well, I'm going over to Yellowstone today. I'm going to skate.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Which reminds me. Who is that, Sato?
Yeah.
Put me under the investigation lights, you know? It's like, were you there on the night of, yes, I did it.
Shoot. Come on, Greg. Get over here. You deserve the spotlight.
No.
He's our senior member.
Senior. These are all slide-in, full-time residents.
Clued and Sato are basically a married couple. I went fishing with them once, and Sato's driving, and Clued goes, you're driving too fast. He goes, did I ask you? You better slow down. I'd like to get there alive. Cracking up in the back seat.
See how the rest
all of right, somebody's got to have a question by now, huh?
Nobody? Good, read one.
Josh, what you got?
Do you ever fish a soft tackle or like a winged wet upstream?
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
That's Josh. So just for the people on the podcast, Josh asked if Kelly ever fishes a winged wet or a soft tackle upstream.
I don't do it as much on the Madison. When I lived in Michigan, I mean, that's how when I learned to fish back in the 60s, everything was a wet fly swing, right? And we fished completely different for the most part. Dry fly fishing was not that big of a deal back then. But it was kind of, because traditionally, before we started saying swing, it was wet fly, and it was a damp fly. You would throw it up and fish it tight line, kind of. Not
say it.
No, I'm not saying
say it.
It's kind of like you're leading it, and you fished them as a dry kind of, right? Yeah, you kind of let it, kind of like some other ways of fishing.
And
no cider. No, we're not going to say it. No, you just kind of let it, right? But then you would roll it out and you'd fish your seam, you know, and try to, and then you would mend and you would just kind of swing it out, right? And you would do dry, damp, wet swing out. And then it kind of, it morphed somewhere in there where almost everyone swung them almost exclusive, right? But they're so, I probably fish, I the guys that from here that know, I've said, I bet I've caught 70% of my caddis fish on a sunk caddis under, I run it 6 inches at best. Now see that, 6 inches? anywhere from 3 to 6 inches behind my dry. And I mean, at least 70% of the fish I catch on caddis are under, and it's exactly how you would fish a wet upstream in the old days. You're up and tight, following, you try to find that, what we used to call a sighter would be your dry fly, you know, like a before dry dropper was all that. And you'd call that, and I'll tell you, it's crazy. I never see my fly move. It pisses me off. I just, it's like, damn it. It's a, and you've got one again, they ate it under the water. That's what was so difficult. Maybe it's why, and imagine back, way back then, that your equipment's not that good. I mean, you're just coming into floating fly lines and shit like that. I mean, I saw the first car, right? It was like really cool. Just kidding. No, it's just like, it was hard to keep track of that stuff, but it was so effective. It's crazy. Still is. The Madison, I think, is a tough river to do it on if you cast too far. I mean, I hardly ever fish from me to Heather's knee, right? I mean, that's a long cast for me. I it's so many convergent things and so much, and then you're trying to lead a site. And so a lot of it's evening fishing. I love to put an ant, like an 18 or 20 ant underneath any dry and do that, and you're basically, because, you know,
a
back
dry
then,
ant or a wet ant?
Wet.
Yeah.
But I use dry ants and let them just barely go under. Not foam ants like today, but, you know, regular old,
like
probably
like
a better, like a Fran Betters or somebody, yeah. Just a regular McMurray ants, but before they were cork and stuff. But then, what's his name? The guy wrote the book on, Jesus, embarrassing. He's from Bozeman. Who wrote the Wet Fly Swing book? Oh, I can see his name. I've fished with him 20 times. Anyway, he was popularizing, we have to find this because it's driving me crazy. I've known this guy forever.
All right, forever. I got it in front of me.
And he died like 10 years ago. But I mean, it's like, it was all about a swing, you know, and which I love swinging wet flies. I really do. In my Cripples and Spinners.
Dave Hughes?
Huh? No. He's a great angler, though. Phenomenal. Dave Hughes is probably the best entomologist ever. I mean, he is such a, man, his books, something else. How come nobody knows this guy's name? How come?
Sylvester.
Sylvester. Oh, jeez. Thank you. God.
Yeah. Names. You were on it.
Names. But he probably, you know, he did a lot of swing, traditional swing stuff. Money. I mean, everything went to the soft tackle, partridge, very European end. But U.S. side, you know, when I grew up, like I said, when I started doing that, we would frequently run a brace, three flies. And they're pretty big, and they were wet flies, like that big. And you would just swing tight, but you kind of set up like you would a steelhead set. You didn't, when you watch people, they tend to want to go across, and they just kind of stand there, and they get this just nuking fly going sideways, right? Yeah. And then if they get one, it's right at the end, and their fish, they're probably easy to land because they're probably wore out chasing that bat. But you get them right in the end. But not so much out here on the Henry's Fork, do a lot of it down there. Yeah, that's classic water for it.
Do you have a favorite soft tackle, wing wet fly?
Yeah, well.
Josh asked if there's a favorite wet fly or what, winged wet?
Yeah, winged
soft tackle. Yeah.
I love bastardized lead wing Coachmans. I just do a little bit more to them. I love a cow dung. That's a real old one, a traditional. My dad's favorite. That's how I started tying. Do bluegill flies until I was about 7, and then I started doing Queen of the Waters and Henryville specials. They nuke those things. I mean, part of that whole July rules week in or month. I mean, is that most of that is pre-1960s flies. The same thing happened. On the dries, traditional hackle, no parachuting. They eat the hell out of them. But the Bivisible, or nobody even knows what it is anymore. Great fly. It's total dry, but the partridge and all those are spectacular during the caddis, but when there's any mayflies, I go right into that, like a hare's ear traditional winged quill wing. They eat the shit out of them. It's like they haven't seen one in 50 years. And I think they say, I was talking to Brian O'Keefe, was that 2 years ago when we did the...
2 years.
2 years, I
think. In Chile?
No, when we... He called me, he says, what are you doing?
I think it was
And it was July, and I says, well, it's rules week, right? Because I only get to fish at night. And so he says, what do you mean? I said, well, everything's... This week is pre-1960s traditional hackle. He goes, what are you fishing? Red fox. Five turns of, you know, tinsel. It's a night fly, right? And I only get one fly. And I got to pick it before I leave. And I can't fish the same fly twice. And I can't fish the fly I know they're going to eat, which is a real pain. He goes, holy shit, I'm doing this. I just got off the South Fork. And he says, and he was fishing PMDs, I think, with a size 12 Cahill, traditional Cahill. He goes, it's like crack. They're just attacking it. I says, well, we haven't seen one in 40 years. And he says, I can't believe we're doing the same thing. I says, yeah, I know. Don't tell people. And so, but a Cahill back in the day, white, that's a big, there ain't no PMD that size. And so, but, you know, they haven't seen it. But, yeah, I do fish them not as much as I should probably. But that river's, you know, the Madison's, especially in that upper 5 miles, it's moving, you know. And so, and that's, I usually just walk out of the house to fish. And so I get a limited number of pools that are just classic for much, you know. They're more like, a pool would be more like the size of this table.
Yeah.
That'd be a great one. And you get about a 2 foot run before everything goes ka-gah, tighter than, you know.
There's, yeah, like.
And the park too, a lot.
You got a good one this morning, right? Swinging a wet fly in the park.
Nice. Did you?
I'm a lucky bucky.
Where you fish in the park?
Not supposed to ask that clue.
It wasn't
Barnes. It's
that might have been the
best. It's that one. It's the two boulders right by each other. That one.
Yeah. There was the dead tree in Quake Lake.
Yeah. Yeah. One of our guides, Skinny, had his guide bio, favorite place to fish near the dead tree in Quake Lake. That was great.
Yeah, actually, I yelled at a couple of our shop guys the other day because I caught a big fish, and they asked me where. I said, bad question. Don't ask that. You ask what it ate, I'll tell you that. I'm not going to tell you where. I might tell you, but nobody else.
I wouldn't consider Lucky Bucky the flies. That wouldn't be... That rolls into the flimp world to me a little different than a wet fly, you know, because the size of them and the shape, you know, how they roll out as far as a traditional wet. Few people on earth tie better than Bucky's wet flies, but it's not what I would. There was an era in the late 70s where there was bigger and webbier hackle, and some were flimpish and some were in that world. That's more to me than it would be like a traditional, not what I do in the park. Well, when I fished it back in the day, just because of, you know, John and Bucky and those guys' influence, and they're all such great. I mean, Jesus. Did you drop the puck at my place that had the one Bucky in it? That one, who was that? And I grabbed that puck because I thought the guy grabbed, I gave Bucky shit on the podcast about never giving, he gave him some flies. Well, that piece of shit never gave me a, so he tied me a whole cup of them, right? I thought this guy had my puck, and I grabbed that off that thing. I'll never fish the things. And then they're going to go into Walmart or something, right? He goes, what are you doing? That's my fly. I said, oh, you only got one. I got like six. Yeah.
We've talked about Bucky a lot, but Chuck and I were just up there the other day. We spent like an hour and a half bullshitting with him. If you guys haven't been into Blue Ribbon, I mean, yeah. Bucky's such a good dude. And if you want to learn about the spay game, swinging wet flies, soft tackles, littler stuff, like, he is the guy to talk to around here.
PA.
Yeah.
Big Eastern.
He said he was putting the mustang.
Yeah.
And I said, you tied all those? He says, no, I can't tie them anymore. And he says, blue or
MFC.
MFC. Yeah.
It's time for me. So I'd spend the whole day sitting there tying, couldn't keep it. You know,
they
go off as fast as...
Yeah, somebody will go in there and buy the whole bin out whenever...
I would, yeah. But now I don't have to.
Another Bucky fly that I think is worth talking about is...
For those who don't know, we are in West Yellowstone, and we're talking about soft tackles in swinging on the Madison. We keep talking about Bucky and blue ribbon flies, but it's a real... It's a thing in maybe the only place I know... Maybe anywhere in the U.S. where in the fall you will see more people swinging a size, you know, like an inch and a half, 2 inch long wet fly. And it'll be almost exclusively everyone on that stretch of the river will be doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, in that 2 mile section. And it's, I don't know any place else where it goes down like that. It's just so tradition. And it hangs some monster fish. If it never caught anything, it wouldn't be.
No, it works.
And yeah, you wouldn't.
It's weird to see trout rivers with that many two-handed rods.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
And then pre-T-hander, it was still there. And yeah. It was just guys 10-foot in it. And a lot of 10-footers in there, single-hand swinging it, and all the
it's
same.
It's kind of a cool cultural thing. I mean,
yeah.
And then I've talked about it a couple times, but Jeff, who's tying here today, I think, with Kyler, talked about how some Euro nymphers came in and ran all the trout out of Barnes 1. That oh. If he saw them again, he'd drown them. And I believe him.
I don't really think they run them out. They move back in.
Yeah, they probably do. I don't, you know, migratory fish, whatever.
Euro nymphers in there. I think of Kelly. Because I think of the thing that you always say, if you're going to die, you ought to die by a bear bite.
What would you know about dying young? How old are you now?
82 and a half.
Still.
He fishes harder than
fishes harder
the majority
than
of
people in the
everybody
world.
Watching this. Yeah. So, dude, how many months do you spend out of the slide every year?
This year I'm only spending 3.5 months.
Yeah, well, you're gone for 3 weeks.
Sato, what about you? How many months do you spend out of the slide? You spend most of that asleep?
Yeah. I get up at noon and get out fishing.
Noon's early. You're lying. It's more like 3.
Yeah. No, he gets up at noon. I see him out there.
Every once in a while.
Yeah, but he works till 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Later. Who was it? The guys were leaving for the South Fork the other morning at 4 a.m. When they got up, your lights were still on in your trailer.
Yeah. I go to bed about 7. I get up at noon. He gets back from fishing in the morning, and then we go out at night.
You should be mousing more.
I did last week.
There you go.
There you go. What do we got?
All right, who else has another question? Anybody? Go for it. What's your name?
John.
John.
What advice do you have for somebody that wants to get into streamer?
So he asked, what advice you have for somebody that wants to get into streamer fishing?
Start there's a massive trend of, you know, it's going backwards finally.
I don't know if you heard Clued, by the way. He said, go into the slide in and buy a shitload of flies.
Of course you
That's would not Josh's
do,
method.
I would not do that. I would do, well, I wouldn't mind it if you do, but I would start, identify where you're going to fish so you don't overrod and get too big of equipment. 5 years ago, it was so, everybody's running these flies that were just ridiculously big, right? I'd start my game. Do you wade fish or wade fish? I'd start with a 6 weight, and I'd have virtually no articulated flies. I'd have half my box that would be traditional cougars and woolly sculpin, sparkle minnow, and I would have my biggest fly would be a traditional dungeon, which is like 5 inches, and I wouldn't be super heavy in that. I would be more minis, 3-inch flies, and I would learn to animate the flies. There's just too much emphasis on the fly. The fly is not a, it's part of it. I would have for sure, I would have all colors because you need 4 or 5 colors in flies. There's days when he wants an olive, if they're on yellow, you can pitch that son of a bitch until your arm falls off. They're not gonna eat it. They get very color specific. I think most fish do.
I'd say size as well.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I said. Everything would be 3. on a suicide bite, when you've got reactionary stuff going, they're going to eat almost anything. I mean, the size stops mattering, and they're, because sometimes a really big reactionary flies work, like a flathead kitty. If they're not on that, it ain't happening. But they'll eat a 3-inch fly every day of the week. And they'll, when they're going to eat a 6-inch, 7, 8-inch fly, they're also going to eat a 3. If they're going to eat a 3 and not a 7 or 8, you're just wasting money. So I would roll with like 3 basic patterns. One of them that's forgotten completely is a woolly bugger. I'd have a number 2 black woolly bugger. I'd always have them with me. It can be a total life changer. But I would stay in that medium. You know, if you go back in time, the first really big national fly streamer was my Zoo Cougar. That thing's that long. We have flies right now that you could hook four cougars, which people would come in and see that cougar, which the four was the number one seller, and they'd say, what the hell's that, a pike fly? I mean, because they're used to a muddler that was that big, right? Now you see flies that long, that it's like four of them hooked together. Well, on those days, that's pretty cool when they're on that bite. But most important, flies secondary to you reading water, figuring out how you can move the fly in the water. And that's a short game. You figure that out. And then the rest comes real easy. Once you have a day where you see that your animation did whatever you did to the fly triggered the fish, then the rest of the days get real easy. And then you can go psycho. We went through that thing where we went from 2.5 to 3-inch flies to 13-inch flies. We're running 450 grain heads to throw the flies on 8 weights and 9 weights. It never caught fish. It caught pike once in a while. And it just started slowly going. And you had this influx of a handful of musky guys that really some of the things were just pure luck. And then people kind of got locked in on it. And then that was about a 3-year window of just lunacy size flies. And then it all ended up back where it belonged. I can tell you that I don't think the catch ratio, including fish up in that high 20s zone, has gone up significantly from the big flies. It's by size only, you know. Motion was a big part of it, but until the Slick Willy showed up, the dungeon, it was 3 years into the dungeon before any fly eclipsed, or for fish over 26, eclipsed a stack blonde or a Zoo Cougar. I mean, and that's fish in the 30 world too, just going up there. The fly started swimming, and you're looking at them, you're like, oh my God, it's got, and they caught a lot of fish, right? But I think it kind of ended, even in like the D&D world, where we sell a lot of those, which is just a great fly, but we still catch more on that less than 6-inch fish or fly.
And I've been throwing those mini D&Ds a ton.
Yeah,
they turn over easy. They're easier on your arm. I mean, jerk stripping a big D&D is tough for that big wedge head. I mean, there's resistance, and it's easy for a couple casts, but when you're looking at your 8th or 900th retrieve of the day, it's tiring.
If you're on foot, it's a little less, and you can relax a little more because you don't have to hit. But if you're in a boat, you essentially are casting. Your repetitive behavior is about 11-second intervals. And so you start rolling in 250s and 300 grain heads and 8 weight rods, it wears you out. But the most important thing is just to start. Everybody starts by pulling on the rope, right? Which is cute. That's a cute way to fish. But you should at least have two gains, really fast and really slow. And most streamer anglers have no slow game whatsoever. If you're a rope puller and this is all you do, when you're not pulling against it, it's stagnant. And it's at the mercy. It's good stalling technique if you're doing it on purpose. But it doesn't really, if you try to go slow, like just pull like this, it's not a lake. If the river's current, and your fly will just basically do nothing. So you need to learn to make a fly go vertically up and down, and one that goes like this. But you need two games for sure.
The rope pulling where it falls apart, like it can work really well if you're throwing downstream, like traditional kind of swing angles, quartering across, even true perpendicular to the flow of the water. Like, then when you stall, that fly is still kind of probably in different currents and moving, doing something different. But what you lose, I think, is any ability to throw upstream. It's really hard to like animate your fly properly and understand, because you lose the feel of it, and it's hard to keep up versus when you're rod tip animating. You know, you can actually kind of feel that fly chugging along and understand what it's doing there.
And
so I always say to throw white
tip. On that note about wade fishing, we fish, I mean, mostly upstream on foot, right? And that's when I'm not a big fan of articulated flies upstream. There's a few I'll fish. They got to be pretty light. I've got to be able to continuous a bit. I have to have my rod doing it all. That's where I really, really like the single hook flies. I mean, they don't get bent in half by mistake. You take a 6-inch slick willy, which is a super speed fly, and you can keeping up with it. You stop it, it'll bend right in half. Or worse yet, a flatliner, a bangtails, those with the big tails on them, they'll fold right over. I like them to fold half, like on a stall, coming across something, I'm moving it, flies coming. I particularly like to have flies that rip like crazy and then die over a shoal. Like you're coming off of this, you're going from this deep of water to this deep. When this thing comes off that, I stall it when it comes here, like, oh shit, got a cramp, and I run like hell, right? And yet it's hard to do that upstream on foot with a bigger fly, but it's not hard. A Zoo Cougar, for example, never loses its shape. It doesn't. Or a Sparkle Minnow. The tail is just not enough to go back around and lose its shape. And so you don't have that, they don't identify you. No matter how good you think a fly is, it still don't look like shit. I mean, it's still a fly. It's still your version of nature. And I would say the Zoo Cougar may be one of the best of all of them, because all they see is the taper, the shape of the body. There's not much else underneath it that they see the taper, so it doesn't distort the way nothing's, I think, ever outsold the sextension. I don't think ever in history. I mean, it's just stupid how many that thing, but it's great under tension, and it's great as it puffs up and does its thing, like a spey fly or something, you know, they get really tight and then they breathe a little like that. But if you're fishing up and across or any type of up, there's none of that happening. It's just backwards, really. So single hooks are great. If you notice, which most people haven't, but when I wrote the first book, when Bob and I wrote that, there were no articulated flies in it. There were zero. And we had just started articulating. And in the second book, there's only a couple single hook flies in it. Everything went to the articulated, right? Because it's just, in certain fashions, they do outfish, but you need to have that other game too.
So, as a wade angler, what's the best across? I mean, what would be the best?
So,
she asked, what as a wade angler? They can't hear you.
Yeah, sorry. So, wade as a wade angler, what angles are best in terms of throwing your streamer? So, I was thinking about that kind of in reference to your question as well. We went out and filmed a show Between the Lakes with Kelly, and even when he's on foot and actually fishing downstream, like he starts up high, he runs the middle, he's trying to mirror boat angles, right? Throw to the bank, bring it off the bank. He's walking downstream almost like a steelhead angler, right? Where you make a cast, take a couple steps down, make another cast. But he's not quartering down, he's generally throwing above perpendicular, so slightly upstream. And then what will happen is
30 degrees or so,
your fly will sink into the water some, assuming you're throwing some sort of fly with weight. And then the water in the top of the column is faster than the water lower down in the column, right? So that's going to make a big downstream belly in your line. And so you can stay tight to your fly. And a lot of the time when he rips his flies off the bank, it's the same thing out of the boat, that fly comes off almost perfectly downstream. And, you know, Kelly's a very good caster, and he can control his leader. A lot of time it's hooking upstream. So that fly is on the bank for two or three strips before it kind of gets peeled off and then, you know, swims past a shelf. He'll stall it there, swim it through the bucket.
But the key to what he's saying about the belly is the fly never gets tail first. It comes, it follows the belly. And so that belly might go, and we're going to get that in quickly. You know, we're not stalling too long, but it almost always stays at least perpendicular to the flow or slightly.
Well, and then the other part of the hydrodynamics.
But you never miss that. You don't ever miss that tail swinging it out. As much as we talk about never tailing a fly to a fish, because it's just not natural for a fish to back into something, right? They aren't steelheads. Steelheads are squid eaters. There's a different dynamic to swing fish that are, you know, anything that lives in the ocean, because they eat stuff. I mean, they eat squid and they eat things. They can go like that. Trout are ambushers. They have to eat the head.
Brown trout,
right? In particular,
especially. Yeah. Rainbows will do it.
You don't. Juveniles will nip the tail. Piss ants will, but they have to eat the thing head first. They have to kill the thing by the head. That's why articulated flies came about. They did not come about to make flies bigger. We frankly made them much smaller. We used to tie on 11 Carrie Stevens hooks, you know, which is a size X, 11X. The hook's that long. So our flies were that long to start. Then we articulated and rusted the first one, that circus bean. It's only that long, but we had the hook up front. But they have to eat the head, so it's not natural to have something back up into a fish's face, but it is very natural because they're feeding off of the vibration that they feel coming in the water, just like a steelhead, all of them, like a freaking whale does it, right? They all feed off the same thing. And so the fly coming around, the one thing that beginning anglers do is they assume the fish is just on that. But a big fish can be from me to you, 20-foot circle. It feels it. It may target down here and come around to ambush or sideways. So you, just like on the wet fly swing, man, if you don't do the hang, if you don't do it and drop it once or twice, steal it, same thing, it's crazy because they track that thing out. But we get a lot into that whole ambush is everything because we do too much bank fishing and not enough. When we were filming that show for the hunt for the 30, we did almost no bank fishing.
No.
We're hunting where the fish are, in the middles and the big flats in the middles and big weed beds and things where the fish are. And so then you might go straight up and come down at it, but you've got control. But when we wade fish, the best angle, it depends on the speed of the river too, because you're on the Henry's Fork, all rules are off, right? There's no current. If you're up in the park, or even in the Madison in the park, you get a lot more diversity of your retrieve because the current is not instantly, you know, affecting your retrieve. We do a ton of straight upstream though too,
especially around
on foot,
around
which is
your
a total
pay,
around yeah on the Madison because it's dictating that you do that because you aren't hucking that sumbitch to the other bank on the Madison on foot and you aren't getting in the middle of it. That for sure isn't happening. Josh isn't getting in the middle of it. I don't give a shit. You 6'9" and 350 pounds. I've watched guys that size try to get out there. It's like they're coming back just a little faster than I would. Right? It's like, holy shit. But upstream, like he in particular fishes a shit ton and catches a ton of big fish on creeks that you drive past. And those creeks, there is no option other than straight upstream.
Straight upstream.
And then you have really short retrieves. You better have a total rod game because stripping it gets really, really tough, right? There's days when you can do it, but you better be able to animate it. And it's a short window. Like a 10 foot for me would be a pretty long
like
retrieve.
Like almost maximum.
Yeah,
a lot of the time
that's,
when I'm
that's a total A game day too.
Like when we do, so we fish a lot around the slide in, you know, Reynolds area, $3, where that water is so fast, especially once you get above Reynolds, and those fish are going to be within 6 feet of the bank, most likely. Now there's some, the rules are always broken, but a lot of the time what I'll do is I won't even use my left hand for anything. I will pull out about 10 foot of fly line out of my rod tip. And then I basically slap it down and I'll do 3 rod jerks. And that's maybe 6 foot of retrieve. And if they're not on it there, they're just not going to get it. And I always do like a kind of a flip around. One of our guides calls it a switch up. And he's really good at snagging fish doing it. When they boil on it and he throws a loop at them and gets them in the gut.
There's a saying about that. You can eat it or you can wear it. Choice is yours.
But yeah, it's super short retrieves, and then, you know, you walk up about 4 or 5 feet and try to fish some new water. And if there's somewhere where I really know there's a fish, I might give it 3 casts. But generally, it's going to be 1, and if they don't eat it then...
And that's the same as if you're on a foot, on boat.
I think
they're very hip to want... They're going to respond. It's planting your feet and becoming a mailbox is really...
The worst thing you could possibly do.
Yeah, I mean, you see people that just want to do repetitive, and it's like... Or I get that question a lot, so I know there's a fish there. And what do you do? How many change-ups? I go light to dark, fast to slow, and I'm out. I mean, I could have a 35 sitting there. They're going to respond or they're not. They're not going to suddenly have the magic, you know, lucky bucky fly that suddenly after 60 flies go past it. Oh, shit, yeah, I got to have that.
See,
one.
Only once have I ever had that happen, and I was in Wyoming. A thunderstorm came in. We finally started moving fish. And I had hooked this fish the day before. He's in the exact same spot, and I thought he's somewhere around 26, and he's the biggest brown trout I've seen in person. And I hooked him the first day and lost him, and then the next day I got him to follow a streamer to my feet. He turns around and goes back to his lie. And I changed flies 6 times, and he followed it every single time, but didn't eat. He'd follow it down, turn around, go back up. I finally went back to white, the first fly he followed, and he ate it. And then I lost him.
I can tell you that there's always that rule. And I have one
there's
in the
one.
First.
I mean, it's not a,
in
it's,
the first, yeah. I beat you. I had one do it 16 times with 2 witnesses. Jerry Dennis and I, and it's in the book.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what happened to you, which has happened every time it's ever happened to me. If I can get him to move is one thing. To see a fish and put it over it is what I was talking. Like, they're either going to go or get. This stupid hen, 19-inch fish. No, brown trout. And we were walking, and I got up, and it moved. And I changed 16 times. And finally, I think it. Jerry wrote about it, too. I think on the 16th time of her moving, she came up and hit a zoo cougar, the first thing I had on. And I'm like, oh, shit. I go, can I look at Jerry? He says, and he's already turned around pissed off. Like, can't. I said, can you believe that? Oh! And it ate it a third time. And it ate, and I got it, right? Nobody will take my picture. They don't even want to talk to me. They're like, you. I said, I've only been lucky like that like twice in my life. Once I had to pay for it. So, or something like that.
Going back to your question, John, I think one of the other things that it's really hard as a beginner streamer angler to actually believe that these fish act like this, right? Like, you're used to nymphing, you're used to dry fly fishing. Everything seems so slow and gentle. You just have to believe that it will happen. And I think, like Kelly said, you need a fast game, you need a slow game. It's really good to start with a fast game, because then the first time you see a brown trout move on a fly, even if it doesn't eat it, and like theoretically they can swim 40 miles per hour, and it seems like they're going faster sometimes.
40 miles an hour, more like 35, but 30, 40 miles an hour from here to that wall is imperceivable to the naked eye. If you don't understand that, walk out in that road where they're supposed to be doing 25 and just get 5 feet and see, or 10 feet away from that car and see how...
It's a fraction of a second.
It is so crazy, and they're there and they're gone.
It's just so hard to believe that they actually do it until you see it. And like, we see people in the shop all the time that they'll come in, they want to learn to streamer fish, they buy the flies, they go out and they do it for 20 minutes, they don't get a move on it, and then they go back to nymphing. And
you gotta,
like, you put your time in, and then once you see it once, you will instantly be a believer that it can happen. And like that, everything Kelly said, right, that they eat it coming downhill, they smash the head. I mean, it is, it's this. Need it now after seeing it once. I mean, if I don't see it, a couple times a week, I go nuts.
You know who really should be better streamer fishermen are those steelhead geeks. Whoops. Because steelheaders have no problem going all day for a pull. But streamers, huh? Yeah. I mean, it's like, and that's okay with them. But people go streamer fishing, 2 hours in, they're like, bullshit, I'm putting on a Euro nymph. And it's like, I've told everybody on earth, you see a 30 turn on a fly, it'll change your life.
I think the best example that we went to shoot a show.
That's like a 25-pound steelhead turning on it, right?
We went to shoot a show this spring in a kind of an experimental fishery. Didn't know much about it. This episode will come out at some point, but it's Kelly and his good friend Bill, who I don't know if there's a guy between Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana that's caught more 10-pound trout than Bill Erdman. He's a gear guy, fishes for Paulus, but he just gets them. He knows where they are, and he gets them. And it was 2.5, a little over 2.5 complete days on this fishery with a jet
brutal boat. Days.
Going up and down, I mean, like dawn to dusk, fishing hard.
Low wind was 40.
We drank a little bit one of those nights too, but
One of us drank a little bit.
I might have had a little. But, you know, we didn't see a fish for 2.5 days. And these guys would just keep plugging away. They know, right? They know this, the battle and the struggle of trying to find big fish. And then, I mean, it's one of my favorite quotes. We see two small fish, two really good fish, and then Kelly just turns to Bill and goes, "You know a 10-pounder's coming today."
Yeah, you could feel
it. Bill might have gotten one. I have to wait to see the episode.
But I think I hooked it first. And I'm like, no! Like this, I get this pull. I'm like, shit! And Bill goes, "There it is."
Oh, fuck, it's a goddamn alligator.
Yeah, it was a freaking
monster. Was an alligator.
But, yeah, that was a good call.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just, trophy hunting, it doesn't come easy. And now, for some, it does. Like the kid who got the Idaho state record fishing a worm off a dog.
Yeah, but, I mean, the same thing is true with if you're a really die-hard dry angler,
yeah,
putting a two-footer on a dry fly is just as white whale as a 30 on a streamer.
Yeah.
I mean, everything has its limitations. It is what it is. I mean, you take a pure dry person. I mean, 20 used to be really huge until we started lying. I mean, it used to be in the old days, 20 was a huge fish. Now it's like, oh, I got four of those. Yeah, sure you did.
Yeah, right.
You know, but.
Anyway. Any other questions before we wrap this thing up? What you got?
I had a question for you, Kelly.
Yes? Is that Joe?
The question is.
Is that Joe?
Yeah. It's a dry fly question.
Okay, I can't. Is that Joe? Who is it? I can't see anything about it.
What's your name? You come to
Joe.
Joe. Yeah, because you come
Joe?
To the shop
I can hear
all the time.
Voice,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I can't see your face. Well, I still can't see it.
Well,
this is why they interrogate people like this, so you can't see the interrogators. What's the dry fly question?
Do you feel comfortable?
I feel right at home, actually. I've been in this room a lot.
The question is, have you ever had, because I noticed that, like, fishing the Madison, I've fished the Yellowstone, that's mm-hmm. happened. It's been a predominant, say, like a caddis hatch. And I've had whitefish come up and eat dry flies, and I could never understand that because I always thought whitefish was bottom feeders.
Oh, no, they'll eat anything.
So his question just for the podcast, he's asking about whitefish eating dry flies. He's seen it in a couple different places.
Like during, like, a heavy caddis hatch.
Yeah, heavy caddis hatch, whitefish are up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to think that they never ate dry flies.
Yeah,
I remember
it irked me. And
yeah. No, it happened. They eat streamers a lot, too. I mean, some of my favorite almost were trout, were 20 plus inch whiteys that eat a black dungeon and jacklins.
Yeah.
They eat them like crack. I don't get it. They just chow. But
I've seen them swinging in the park a lot.
I've had them. I was fishing Bill Devane one of the first times I guided Bill, and he got a 2-footer on a betis, and he was pissed when he got it in. I said,
"That's a unicorn, dude.
Are you kidding me?" That's as if I'd have told you to pull hard, he'd have broke it off and been at the bar telling everybody, "I had a 28 inch rainbow on." And it, but yeah, they do it. It's just, but it is an anomaly. It's not very often.
If you're searching with a dry fly, mm-hmm. you never see it happen. It only always happens.
No, it's only when they come up
well,
in
there's
pods.
There's a lot of biomass just bringing them up. And so that, yeah.
I got a good one on the big hole on a size 4 black and purple water walker. It ate it like a giant brown trout where you just never saw anything. The fly just disappears.
Yeah.
I set up on him and I'm like, oh, it's him.
Yeah, it happens.
And it was a whitey.
It's not, it happens 3-4 times a year.
I'll say one of the most fun days of fishing I've ever had, I was swinging some of the runs up above Pine Butte with a Montana intruder. And those runs are giant in the middle. I mean, it's huge water, but it's kind of hot out. So I thought fish might be in there. Like, I'm in probably the top foot of the column. And I kept getting just clobbered. And I'd yell down to Chuck. I'm like, it's a huge brown. It'd be like an 18, 19 inch whitefish. And if they're eating streamers in the top of the column, that's a game fish. I'm in. I got no problem with them at all.
It's over.
I don't like how they wiggle. That's not my favorite.
Right. But. Yeah.
So, all right. I think that's our time here.
No, I got to call out.
Oh, yeah. What, are you pissed off about something?
No, no. This is a good one. This is a really cool one.
Oh, yeah.
Our buddy Bob Davis, who stays at the place.
Bob Davis, who is the man.
He's a veteran.
Yep.
And he said, you've got to call out. He says, you've got a big following at the Pentagon.
Jason Metzger.
Metzger and his buddies, who are all, they have a, they watch the podcast, and evidently there's a club in the Pentagon that watches it. So thank you for what
you
do.
Shout out to you guys. Yeah.
Love you, and very cool that we're in the Pentagon.
And so scary. Don't listen to us.
And yet so scary.
So scary.
But thank you for watching. That's really cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. I mean, cool. Yeah, he says there's some high-ranking officials that are
very high. Yeah, generals and force and all that stuff. And I'm like, God, perfect. Anyway, thank you. That was a blast. We'll probably start doing these live everywhere because it's more fun.
Yeah,
I like these questions. I don't have to look at you. You have to look at Heather. Are you kidding me? Her husband is a POS because he's still in bed sleeping, and it's 1 o'clock, Eric. Yeah, all that clean living's really paying off.
All right, well, thanks, everyone. Thanks, everybody here.
What a blast.
Super fun, and we'll see you next week.
And I'm to the bathroom. Holy smokes. Thank you.